Good afternoon. In the slide 9, a device is shown that is obtained by joining side by side two complementary silicon controlled rectifiers. Looking at the picture in the left upper part of the slide, in fact, we see that we have four layers that are rich of free electrons or free holes with a distribution of this area that is different. If we divide the layers in two columns, one in the left part and one in the right part, we see that in the right part we start from a region rich of holes, so a P region typically. Then we have two very thin regions with the electron and then holes prevalent, and finally we will have again a region with many free electrons. So we could say that looking at the right part of the layers, we will have a PNPN sequence. Looking instead at the left part of the layers, the situation is upside down, NPNP. At the beginning, more electrons, then a very thin layer rich of holes, and then another thin layer rich of free electrons, and finally a layer with prevalent presence of holes. In other words, we could say that in the left part we have a silicon controlled rectifier that is oriented from bottom to up, while in the right part we could say that we have a silicon controlled rectifier that can be crossed by a current from top to bottom, exactly like the symbol that is shown in the upper right part of the slide itself. Two points that are sensible to the voltage applied, that is an anode and a cathode, are applied respectively to the top and at the bottom of such a device. So we will able to have a new component, a new electronic component, that depending if the voltage between these two points, between the anode and the cathode, is positive or negative, will allow the current to flow in both the directions. The triac, this is the name of this new component that we have built, is therefore able to allow the generation of current and the application of a power signal to a load, exploiting both the waveform of a sinusoidal signal that is applied to it at the anode and the cathode. Oh, this is clearly a good thing, because compared to the SCR, this means that the triac will allow to use all the available power, and not only, because if we consider the possibility that the power is applied to a motor, we understand that for an industrial process it will be very important that the motor, for example a direct current motor, could rotate in both the directions. And with a SCR this is not possible. Instead, with a triac this is possible, because we can provide a voltage positive or negative to the motor, so determining the right or the desired direction into which it has to rotate. The triac is equipped with a unique input gate to which a voltage is applied. This voltage can be positive or negative. Usually a positive pulse is applied if the voltage between anode and cathode is positive, or a negative one vice versa. And this triggers the passage of the current in both the direction. The load is usually applied in a series, and the triac turns off when the voltage crosses the zero point, every time this happens. So we can say the potential drawback is that we need to turn on to apply the input at the gate of the triac basically every half the period of the waveform, the sinusoidal waveform we want to provide to the load. Typically the triac is supplied with a galvanic coupling circuit that avoids dangerous ground loop and, as usual, separates the part of the electronic control circuit that provides the power from the part that is connected to the load and controls its behavior. In the lower right part of the picture of the slide 9, we have a diagram that shows the direction of the current that crosses the triac together with the sign of the voltage applied to the gate. For example, the right upper part of this diagram shows that by applying a positive voltage to the gate, considering that a positive voltage is given between anode and cathode, the current will cross the component from top to bottom. Conversely, looking at the second part of the diagram in the left upper part, in this case the voltage applied to the gate is negative, and the current will cross the device in the same sense, since the voltage applied between anode and cathode is positive, but this will be related to the other half of the triac itself. Looking finally, for example, at the right lower part of the diagram, in this case we have a positive current, a positive voltage applied to the gate, but the voltage applied between anode and cathode is negative, so the direction of the current is from bottom to up. Now the question could be how to regulate the delay from the zero crossing point so as to determine the moment of the time into which the triac or the SCR could be turned on. Both the triac and the SCR in fact can be used in the so-called wave parcelization mode that features the application of a suitable voltage to a load after a certain interval of time from the moment into which the signal crosses the zero point. In the slide number 10, a first solution just to regulate this delay is proposed. We have the typical 50 Hz sinusoidal waveform applied to a load, but the current will effectively cross the load only when a triggering pulse will be applied to the gate, in this case of a triac. The voltage applied to the gate is called VG, and in the figure is represented by that small red piece of the curve. The delay with respect the moment into which the signal crosses the zero axis is called tau, and it is determined by the product of that resistor and that capacitor that are shown in the circuit. And to regulate its amount, we could envision the presence of a potentiometer that will modify the value of the resistor, so the value of tau that is equal to R times C. Clearly, this solution is working, but is not satisfying from the automatic control point of view. In fact, we will insert such a circuit into a general control system into which a microprocessor will acquire a physical magnitude by means of a transducer and will perform a regulation on the process by means of the actuator that is supplied by this circuit, better through the triac ruled by this circuit. And it is obvious that to foresee the presence of an operator that modifies the value of the resistor just to modify the value of the tau, and therefore the voltage applied to the load, is against the general concept of a control system completely automatic. One solution could be to program the delay within a microprocessor if it is possible to establish the zero crossing instant in the voltage that we want to apply to the load, and the temporization from that moment could be set through a timer that will notify the processor when to provide the pulse for turning on the SCR or the triac itself. If this is not possible, a new approach is conceived that is based on a new kind of transistor called unijunction transistor. We will see how this device works in the next slides. About the triac, let's conclude that typically it is used as a relay and as a voltage regulator in small domestic appliances, just an example, chandeliers, or in electric motor control. The power is better exploited compared to the silicon controlled rectifier, but the triac, of course, since provides more power, needs also to dissipate thermal energy, and for this must be equipped with the suitable sinks. The unijunction transistor is very similar in terms of concept to a diode. In fact, a silicon bar is characterized by a weak N-type dopant that is a few free set of charge carriers, of electron carriers, that makes the bar equivalent to a big resistor. More or less located at two-thirds of the bar length, a suitable area, very strongly P-type dopant, is inserted. You can see that structure in the picture shown in slide 11. If a positive voltage is applied between the two points located in the top and in the bottom part of the bar. We call them B1 and B2 bases. A weak current will take place, so making the voltage between B2 and B1 distributed linearly along the bar itself. This means that more or less, correspondingly to the P-type dopant area, we should have 2/4 of the total voltage applied between the two bases. That is, the voltage VE correspondingly to that area will be 2/3 VB12. Now we should apply to the E point, that is to the pin that clearly we see in the left part of the bar. We could say that this pin is a gate, a control gate for the transistor. I repeat again, we should apply a voltage that is greater than this threshold. And if the amount of the difference between the voltage applied to E and the voltage present into the bar is greater than 0.7, basically we are looking at junction PN, a diode that features between anode and cathode a voltage difference that is able to polarize it. This phenomenon happens also in this case, so a lot of positive charges will be expelled from the P-type area towards the area with the lower voltage point B1, and the lower part of the bar will get rich with these charge carriers, so as the difference of potential between the point E and the area close to the basis B1 will be lower, and the resistivity will diminish. This phenomenon is quite clear to understand because is like in sports when we have to perform the jump and we make the distance that must be jumped shorter than before. Clearly, for every kind of athlete, this will turn out in a simpler effort to be done. The same for the charges. So, we can understand the behavior shown by the diagram in the lower left part of the slide, into which we see that we applied to the point E a voltage that initially is greater than the threshold we have mentioned, and through this we will have a significant current that is greater than the previous one, very weak, due to the voltage applied between the two bases. But from that point on, the difference in terms of voltage between E and the basis B1 will diminish due to the high accumulation of positive charges in the lower area of the bottom area of the transistor. But the current will increase due to the fact that since the resistivity is lower in this case, more and more charges will arrive into the low part of the bar itself. Clearly, this phenomenon self-regenerates within certain physical limits. That is, the current can increase, can augment, depending on the amount of the P three charges that are inserted into the green area. The current will continue to flow if there is a voltage source applied to the point E that continuously will provide charges for supporting that kind of current. Slide 12 shows a new circuit that exploits the presence of the unijunction device so as to use it to provide a power supply to a load. The load is called ZL, through the presence of a silicon-controlled rectifier, by regulating the amount of the delay tau from the moment into which the classic sinusoidal waveform applied to the load crosses the zero point to the moment into which we provide the trigger signal, the pulse, to the gate of the silicon controlled rectifier, so turning on it and allowing the effective application of the power to the load itself. The circuit may be considered a little bit complex, but to understand it, we should divide it in three parts. The first is on your right side, that is the load, the silicon controlled rectifier, and the galvanic circuit that decouples the load from the remaining control circuit. In this part we have VAL, that is the power supply. ZL is the load. DSCR receives the pulse through that solenoidal circuit that is mirrored with another solenoidal circuit with a transferring ratio 1-to-1, that is the signal in the right inductor is equal to the signal to the voltage in the left inductor, and we know that this decoupling circuit is typically used to keep separate the two circuits, the circuit with the load with the, from the circuit with the control of the signal that is applied, and this is done because typically the grounds, the voltages applied are of orders of magnitude different. The second part of the circuit is the central one, into which we see a transistor T3. That transistor is the unijunction transistor we have just now explained. Its symbol is very similar to the classic transistor 1. The only difference is in the arrow that is drawn in the gate, in the basis of in the gate of the transistor unijunction, that is not horizontal but features a certain level of inclination. And we see that the signal, the voltage, is provided to this point by a capacitor, red colored. The capacitor is basically a voltage tank, so as the current that will cross the unijunction transistor will be supported by a signal that is provided by a suitable source. The left part of the circuit is made off by a couple of transistors, T2 and T1. The first is a p-channel circuit The second is a N-channel transistor, or if you want a P-channel and N-channel MOS circuits. Basically, there is no difference if we consider one or the other mechanism. The basis, the gate of the T1 device is connected to a zero crossing point, to a zero crossing circuit that is made by a comparator connected again through a galvanic decoupling system to the same power supply voltage that we want to provide to the load ZL, so as to establish when we are in the positive or in the negative wave of the signal provided, that we remember is important for us because the silicon control rectifier doesn't work in the negative wave. VB is a signal that is provided to the P-channel device T2, and we will see that this is the point into which we can control the delay and therefore the amount of the power provided to the load by means of a microprocessor. Let's start to understand how the circuit works. One of the central points is represented by the zero crossing circuit, because if we are in the positive wave, looking at the signals that are provided to the inputs of the operational amplifier, we can conclude that in the positive wave we have a negative output from the operational amplifier that will keep the device T1 in interdiction. So in the positive waveform, the negative input of the operational amplifier is greater than the positive one. The output of the comparator is low in terms of voltage applied to the gate of T1, so T1 will be not active, and the current coming from the transistor T2 will go directly into the capacitor, so filling it up to when it has been applied. This current can be determined by considering the voltage VCC applied to the top points of T3 and T2. VCC arrives to T2 through a resistor R, and we know that the current crossing that resistor is VCC minus VB plus 0.7 divided by the amount of that resistor. Yes, indeed, this is, because if VB is the voltage applied to the gate of the transistor T2, this is a P-channel transistor, so in the upper point of the transistor we will have VB plus 0.7 just to keep the transistor active. This current will go into the capacitor C and will bring its voltage to a certain value up to when it will reach the threshold for triggering the activation of the unijunction transistor T3. This threshold, we know, is 2 divided by 3, the voltage VCC, plus 0.7. In this moment, the unijunction transistor T3 will enter in activation and will be crossed by a very intense current that will go to the ground through the resistor R. The resistor R, lowercase, basically is only inserted in that circuit just to limit the voltage drop, and through the inductor that is in front to the other one connected to the gate of the silicon control rectifier. This very intense and violent current will immediately exhaust the charge accumulated into the capacitor, so the current crossing the UJT T3 transistor is very intense, very high, and short. After the C capacitor has been emptied, T3 comes back in interdiction. But this very short and intense pulse applied to the inductor in the decoupling circuit is sufficient to trigger the gate of the silicon control rectifier, so causing the application of the power supply voltage to the load ZL. Now the issue is, can we establish a relationship between the delay from the moment into which the sinusoidal waveform crosses the zero point and the moment into which we turn on the SCR? The answer clearly is positive. In fact, if we look at slide 13, we see clearly that this delay, this interval of time, is the time necessary for the current IC that comes to the capacitor through the device T2 to reach the threshold that we have defined for the gate of the unijunction transistor. And this threshold is 2 on 3 VCC. To be honest, we have said that this threshold is 2 on 3 VCC plus 0.7. But for sake of simplicity, let's neglect in this explanation the quantity 0.7. So we can write, and we can also claim, that tau is equal to 2 on 3 VCC times the capacitor C divided by the current IC. But this current is equal to the difference of the voltages applied to the two extremities of the resistor, VCC minus VB divided by R. Again, also in this case, we are neglecting the 0.7 voltage drop between the gate of T2 and the drain point of T2, that is the real extremity of the resistor R. Finally, we can say that tau is equal to 2 divided by 3 R times C times VCC divided by VCC minus VB. This allows to us to determine the delay through which we decide the amount of the power that we apply to the load ZL. And we apply this power to it by turning on the silicon controlled rectifier. VB, in other words, allows to tune the charge velocity of the capacitor so as to establish when the silicon control rectifier should be turned on. We are able to control in an automatic way the value of tau because we are able to control the amount of the voltage VB applied to the gate of the transistor T2. It is easy, in fact, to imagine that a suitable microprocessor connected to a digital to analog converter can determine the value of VB by writing on a port a suitable binary number that will be converted by the digital analog to analog converter accordingly to the value that we want to set for VB and then for the delay tau. I repeat, the value of the delay tau will determine in turn the amount of the power applied to the load. The slide 13 shows in the left part diagrams that put the different signals that we can distinguish on the circuit in a tight relationship. In the upper part, we have the alternate current signal provided to the load. Then we have the output of the zeros crossing circuit. We see that this output is high in the negative wave and low in the positive wave. Correspondingly, the capacitor will be kept discharged in the negative wave because it doesn't receive any current and instead will be charged during the positive wave up to the threshold we have mentioned, 2 on 3 VCC plus 0.7. At that point, a big current will cross the unijunction T3 device, and this big current will provide an intense and short pulse to the SCR, so turning on it and applying the desired power to the load. But this pulse will be very quick due to the fact that the current that will cross the unijunction transistor is so high to empty the capacitor C. We said that during the negative phase of the alternate current signal, the capacitor is kept discharged. This is true, and this is important because otherwise we would have an input pulse to the SCR in the negative wave of the signal that is not allowed. But why this is possible? Let's come back to slide 12 and let's take a look to the transistor T1 that is a n-channel device. So when it receives into its gate a high signal, it will be active. This happens in the negative wave of the power supply because in that phase the minus input of the operational amplifier is negative and the positive input is positive. So the output of the comparator will be, logically speaking, high. And this will keep active T1, so the current coming from T2 will prefer it because from the impedance point of view an active transistor, an active MOS, if you want, is a very low impedance circuit compared to the capacitor C. In other words, the current coming from T2 will prefer the blue circuit instead of the red one. And this allows us to avoid that in the wrong, in the negative wave, a pulse arrives to the SCR, so trying to keep it active in the phase of the voltage that doesn't allow this. Consider that this circuit works well with the silicon controlled rectifier because it allows to provide a pulse to the gate of the SCR in the right moment during the positive wave of the sinusoidal waveform, while keeping it not triggered in the negative one. But if we have a load that needs both the positive signal and the negative one, for example, a device that needs to move in two direction, to the opposite direction, it is clear that instead of the SCR we need to use a TRIAC, and this circuit will use the TRIAC only in the positive wave. So it is necessary to slightly modifying the logic of the zero crossing circuit so as to provide current to the capacitor also in the negative wave, and this will allow to apply an intense pulse, a pulse for turning on the TRIAC both in the positive and in the negative wave. We will see this easy modification to the circuit in the exercises at the end of the course. This circuit is very nice, is very interesting, but features a limitation related to the non-linearity present between the delay tau, we need to establish the amount of the power applied to the load, and the real manipulated variable that the microprocessor can control, VB. Looking at the formula in slide 13, we see clearly that VB is at the denominator of the ratio that establishes the value of tau. So this is acceptable, this is not the best solution, of course, and we can try to understand if something better can be done. The answer clearly is yes, and it is shown in slide 14, where a SCR emulator is proposed. Consider that this solution works only when the load features a resistive nature, but it represents a good idea and also a good indication of where the possible solution can be found. In such a case, in fact, we know what is the relationship between the average voltage applied to the load and the delay that we decided to have from the zero crossing point to the moment into which we apply the trigger signal to the gate of the SCR. This relationship is shown in the slide in the diagram located in the right lower part of the slide itself. So the idea is to carry out an electronic circuit that reproduces such a kind of diagram exactly as it is, so as to have a block that is compared with a suitable threshold, and when this block reaches the threshold, the famous triggering signal is applied to the SCR, and at that moment we will be sure that the average voltage applied to the load will be exactly what the diagram says, because we have carried out a circuit that from the moment into which the waveform crosses the zero point to the moment into which the comparator sees that the two voltages are equal, the delay will be the one that in the diagram will correspond to the desired voltage applied to the load. Let's look to the circuit that allows to carry out this solution. We have it It is very simple. We have an operational amplifier whose inputs are a suitable voltage that we want on average to apply to the load. And here, remember, we can have the role for the microprocessor, because again this threshold can be set by the output of the micro connected to a digital to analog converter. This value is compared by the analog to the, by the operational amplifier to the value provided by the circuit that is included into the box in the slide. And I repeat, when the two values are equal, the output of the operational amplifier will be raised up to 1, to high, and this will provide a good signal for triggering a silicon controlled rectifier to which the load is applied and to which the load is connected, so as to perform the application of the power supply that we need to the load itself. The circuit into the box is called SCR emulator because it tries to reproduce the behavior of the silicon control rectifier itself. We have an operational amplifier. We have a reaction, a negative reaction, consisting of a resistor and a capacitor circuit. And we have a switch that is kept closed by a zero crossing circuit that is completely equal to the one that we have already seen in the previous solution. So as this switch, when closed, allows to apply a suitable voltage called VM0 to the capacitor that is in reaction to the operational amplifier. This fixed voltage is the voltage that in the diagram that relates Vm with tau is called VM0. Now we imagine to determine the zero crossing point, so we are passing from the negative wave to the positive one. The zero crossing logic will open the switch and the capacitor will be left free to evolve as the law of the electronic circuit says. Looking at the input to the operational amplifier circuit, we see that we have again a galvanic decoupling circuit that provides the same power supply that we want to give to the load, to the circuit itself. So we have a mirroring couple of inductors with the transfer ratio 1:1. And we will have a V1 signal that in the positive wave of the sinusoidal signal is positive, in the negative wave is negative. But this is not a problem because we know that in the negative wave the output is kept fixed to VM0 by the switch that is closed. So we are only interested to the evolution of this circuit during the positive wave of the signal. And in this case we know that the capacitor will discharge from the voltage to which it is kept in the negative wave. The current will cross the capacitor and will go to the resistor R, so going to the ground through the inductor connected to the resistor. The amount of the voltage drop due to the discharging of the capacitor is expressed by the formula integral function of the current crossing the capacitor, that is V1 divided by R, multiplied by the T, and divided by the capacitor C itself. The extremities of the integral function are the moment into which this integral function works, that is when the switch is open, zero, the zero crossing instant, up to tau, that is the moment into which we want that the output of such a kind of circuit reaches the threshold at the input of the operational amplifier. We said that with this formula we try to reproduce the behavior of the voltage applied through a silicon control rectifier when the load is resistive. So the first part, Vm0, has been decided by the switch during the negative phase. We need to have zero voltage when tau is equal to half the period of the sinusoidal waveform, and to do this, to have this, it is necessary to fix that Vm0 is the integral function between 0 and t on 2 of V1 divided by Rc in the t. But clearly this is possible because we can regulate the resistor, the capacitor, and even the amount of the voltage V1 by modifying the transformation ratio in the galvanic decoupling system. We have an initial part of the diagram set at Vm0, a final part set to 0. It is clear that if the formula that we are considering, the voltage Vm is Vm0 minus the integral function, clearly Vm will decrease more or less linearly from Vm0 to 0, depending on the value we have fixed for tau. So we can say that such a kind of circuit emulates the behavior of a SSCR device when the load is resistive. Clearly the best area into which we can use it is the central one, because the evolution of the signal is linear and our capability of regulation is very strong and very precise. We lose precision in the initial part and in the final part, because we see that depending on the values of tau, the variation in the voltage applied to the load is not so immediate and instead tends to remain quite constant. As an alternative to this solution, a lookup table into the microprocessor can be implemented, establishing the correspondence between a fixed delay tau and the relative average voltage that is applied to the load. This ends the part of this section of the course devoted to those devices that we used to provide in a tunable way to a load that is directly related with a process, as for example a resistor that will be crossed by a current and will transform the electronic energy provided into thermal energy. Or maybe a motor that will be supplied and will rotate in a direction with a velocity that is proportional to the average voltage that it receives. And now the second part of this section will be related indeed to the electronic characteristics of the motors that made them from one point very interesting in terms of frequency response and influence on the overall control function of the acquisition chain.
And from the other part, very interesting because they allow to exert a concrete action onto the process, because through them we will learn that it will be possible to control the position of an object, its velocity, and even some movements that can be exerted through the force or the torque applied to the object and received by the motor itself.